inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
A couple of years ago, Chris Ressa decided that he wanted to invest in rental properties for cash flow. The problem is he lives right outside New York City where it's really expensive and the numbers just don't work if you want cash flow. A market like that is more of an appreciation play, but Chris really wanted cash flow. And so what he decided to do was expand his search, and he started looking for areas that were maybe an hour or two away where the prices were a lot cheaper and the rents were still kind of high and the cash flow numbers worked a lot better. And that's what he did. He finally found an area where the numbers worked and his properties are doing really well. So today we're going to hear his story. Let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 60 seconds and we'll meet Chris.
Are you having a hard time finding great investment properties? Unfortunately, the best deals are rarely found locally. Successful investing begins with the right properties in the right markets. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best deals across the U.S. Our simple, proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly cash flow. Get your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing at noradarealestate.com/guide. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com/guide.
If you're a do-it-yourself landlord and you're looking for the ultimate online resource to help you better manage your rentals, check out Rentler. They have everything you could possibly need to help you better manage your rental properties, from taking online applications to tenant screenings and online payment processing. They have a special offer just for our listeners. If you go to tryrentler.com/legal, you can download a report with the fair housing laws for all 50 states. That's TryRentler, TryRentler.com/legal. Hey, Chris, thanks for coming on the show. All right, let's just jump right into your story. When you decided that you were going to buy a rental property, did you even consider properties close by, or did you just know it's too expensive where I live? I need to start looking in areas that are further away.
Yeah, so being a little ignorant about the, the numbers on deals, I knew what type of rent to value ratios I was looking for. And that was really driving the bus for me on the investment and on the investments. I was looking for passive income. So my actual ROI and the, my cash on cash return, all important, but really looking for a place that I was getting significant positive income on a monthly basis. And, because I'm looking at it for the next 30 years, not just looking to make, over the next year, two, 3 years. So if I had a longer term payback, less concerned, more concerned about the positive cash flow every month. And okay. So I started looking in my local area, primarily because in the New York metro area, it's huge rental market. Even mm-hmm. some of the suburbs are huge rental market. So my, intuitively I thought, buying a rental property was going to work here. And, there's a ton of suburbs, plus you have Manhattan and the boroughs. You would think that you could find deals that penciled.
Right.
And I really couldn't. And so I expanded my geography. I said, from where I am, call it two and a half hours in either direction, I would be willing to look. And so that brought me pretty much from Hartford, Connecticut to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I started, chugging along and scouring the MLS in markets all the way down from Hartford to Philly.
Now, it's kind of counterintuitive because, there's a lot of renters in your area. So you would think it would make sense to buy a rental property, but the prices are just too high and the rents aren't high enough and it just doesn't work out. Like, I don't know how anybody makes any money renting out a property in your area.
I don't know. They're either carrying a loss and waiting for appreciation, or they paid all cash.
Right. Yeah. So it's just a different world or a different game than you and I are playing. So,
totally.
All right. So you decided to venture out. And I think this is an important lesson because no matter where you live, if you travel out a couple of hours, prices are going to get a lot cheaper and the numbers are going to work. So tell me about the first area that you started to look at.
So the first few areas I started in, I said, I'll start in Connecticut and work my way down. And I realized that a lot of the suburban markets were still trading like they were in New York Metro, even if they were an hour or 90 minutes out. And so as I kept going down south, I entered into New York. I ended up looking in the, call it traditional downstate New York, the Orange County, New York area, the northeastern Pennsylvania area. And I started to see deals really, really pencil. And, you know, as I started to dig in, I realized these were, you know, blue collar areas, and some people from, there were still good rental areas. Some people from the New York Metro, as the prices continue to rise closer to Manhattan, they're moving west toward the PA border. And I really started to make offers and start to look at deals, call it from the New Jersey PA border, from all the way at the top to where New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania meet, all the way down to just north of Philly. And along that border, there was a lot of deals that started to pencil.
Now, are these areas far enough away from New York City where it's almost its own market, or are people living in these areas and commuting into the city?
So all the answer to that is both. All these areas are, you know, I would say have two types of demographics living there. You have people who are very local, and but they have started to become a hotbed for commuters. And so I'm really dealing with some of the more older, tired real estate, blue collar, local people. And to those people and those markets, you know, New York is no closer than Los Angeles.
Right. Okay. Okay. So the area that you decided on, tell me about what the area is like.
It's about an hour, 10 hour and 15 minutes from New York, you know, close to the same from Philadelphia. So it's, you know, and it's by major highways. It is a demographic that is, lower middle income in most of the spots. And then there's some, you know, farm areas that are, you know, more affluent farm areas. It's a huge town. They just built a new high school. But a lot of people from all different demographics are moving in from the eastern part of New Jersey and most western parts of New York City, and which is right now the real estate in that market's very old and tired, and it's become a huge flipper market. People are buying cash and flipping homes, and I'm in the downtowny area of that market. That's where I am, which is, you know, the blue collar local demographic.
How did you find the area? Did you go driving around, or were you looking online?
I grew up playing sports, and so every weekend I was in a car to a different town. So call it New Jersey, New York, PA. I know a lot of the towns.
Okay.
So I started online looking at towns from the northernmost point down, and I knew of this town, and there was on the New Jersey side, in this county, in Warren County, there's about 10 towns, and I started looking, and in all these markets, deals were penciling. And so I said, you know, let's roll the dice and make some offers.
All right. So you found the area that the numbers are penciling. Now, as far as looking at actual deals, did you find a local realtor to help you out, or how did you start actually looking at properties?
So I have a realtor now. At first, I was calling listing agents and just going. Very inefficient use of time. I'd book like four on a Saturday or four on a Wednesday night after work. I'd drive down about 90 minutes and go look at properties.
Okay. And so when you finally found your the property you bought, the first property, was it from one of these listing agents?
It was.
Okay.
And that guy's now my realtor.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Perfect.
I saw when I was down there, I saw his name was everywhere on every listing. So I was like, you know, I better call this guy.
Yeah, he's that's a great way to find an agent. You know, find someone that's really successful in the area. So tell me about the property.
So it was a duplex. It is a duplex, and it was already rented. So one of the first things I was trying to get positive cash flow day one. And so I bought it in late July. And so my first mortgage payment wasn't due until September 1, but August 1st, the rent was due. And I got rent on August 1st from the two tenants who were there. So that was pretty awesome. It was a $118,000 deal, and I put down 25%.
Oh, wait, tell me again how much the price was for the property.
$118,000.
Okay, and what's it rented for?
So the first floor is rented for $1,000, and the second floor is rented for $2,000. I'm sorry, $1,200.
$1,200. Wow. Okay. So that's awesome. You're at the 2% rule. That is that is really awesome. Now tell me
the one thing I would say is there's one gas meter, so the landlord pays the gas.
Okay.
It's controlled in the basement, so that does eat into the positive cash flow in the winter months.
Okay. Now, tell me about what it's like managing these properties from so far away. Like, I guess first I should ask, do you have a property manager, or are you self-managing these properties?
Self-managing. Have a local handyman, so when there's an issue, I call him, and he goes and takes care of it. That took a while to find somebody who, you know, I could call on and, you know, in the middle of the night to go fix something.
Did you consider getting a manager at first? Like, were you like, you know, I'm busy with my job, I'm not going to be able to run over here if there's an issue. Did you consider having a manager, or did you always want to manage right from the beginning?
I thought for me to really understand, you know, you read about that property management is the key.
Yeah.
I realized that, you know, I decided, you know, one day I want to get to a point where I can't self-manage, but for my first few properties, I wanted to be in the weeds and understand what was going on. And so there was no consideration for a property manager. I was going to do this on my own.
I think that's a good idea. I think it's really important to, or really a good idea to self-manage at first to really learn what goes into it. I think if at some point you decide to hire a manager, you're going to understand everything so much better. So I think that was a good move. And so has it been a lot of work to manage it? Because you've got how many properties now?
Three. Okay. Five units.
Has it been a lot of work or aggravation to manage the properties?
So yes and no. The answer is, I think it depends on how you define a lot of work. For me, it's not. Mm-hmm. For some, it would be. I knew going in, based on networking and my day job, that, you know, mailbox money is, you know, really hard to come by, and that it's really if you're going to manage it, it's going to be a little bit of an intensive process. But I knew that going in, and so I was comfortable with that. Right, if I'm positive cash flow, you know, $1,000 on a property on average on a monthly basis, for me, you know, I could talk to a tenant every other day and try to solve issues. It's worth it for me. I'm ready to roll up my sleeves and figure it out. And so, you know, when I get to 10, you know, where I'm trying to scale up right now, when I get to 10, 15, clearly it's not humanly possible, but for now it doesn't bother me at all. I go there probably on a biweekly basis, and I'm on the phone with one of my tenants, you know, on a weekly basis. There are weeks where I don't, you know, they don't reach out, there's no issues, but there's always something. I think the biggest thing that I had was that I didn't realize was tenant relation issues. I have a duplex, and so when you have a duplex, right, I had one tenant who was smoking and the other tenant got mad, and those type of issues, That's what I didn't expect. I was going in eyes wide open, understanding that, you know, the roof leaks and toilets, that was going to be front and center for me, and I was going to have to deal with that. I didn't think about tenant relations issues and solving those.
Right.
And I've had more calls for that type of stuff than I have for maintenance issues.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting thing that we probably don't talk about enough on this show is when you have a duplex, it's more than just managing that property. You're kind of managing the relationship between the tenants. Like, you've almost got to match personalities up when you have two people living in such close quarters. So how did you resolve that? So one person's smoking and they probably feel like it's their right to smoke in the property. The other person doesn't like it, but they can smell it. So, you know, they don't want to smell the smoke. How do you resolve that?
So, first off, these are two new tenants. The first tenants that I bought had turned over. And so these were two new tenants. And, you know, in my lease, there wasn't a no smoking clause.
Okay.
And so that'll going forward, that's in there.
Good
and
call.
So I went down and I just tried to be human with the person. I said, listen, you know, it's really causing a problem. Can you smoke outside? I understand it's not in the lease. You're allowed to do what you want to do, but I'm just asking. It's causing a challenge. I don't want there to be issues. Can you smoke outside? And coming down there, sitting with them, coming hat in hand, admitting that it is your right, I understand. They were willing to work with me. And plus now that's the added benefit is hopefully I won't have to deal, you know, by the time that person leaves, I won't have to deal with, you know, getting that smoke smell out of the
right
house.
Yeah, that can be a real nightmare. That's a good call. I'm happy that you're putting that in your leases. I put that in all my leases. I do not want to deal with that. So now tell me about the financing. So you said you put 25% down when you bought the property. So this is, you've just done regular traditional bank financing for the properties you bought?
Totally. So I spent a lot of time in the beginning, you know, before I even put down a deal, networking with lenders. I was Googling every lender in the world and creating a list who would do residential rental properties and, you know, making a list, calling, making connections. And for me in the beginning, I was buying in 2016, the low interest rates and the prospect of getting 30 years fixed and putting down at that purchase price, putting down a couple grand more, got me into a different interest rate bracket, you know, so, you know, I'm slightly under 4% on a 30-year fixed mortgage. And since I'm, you know, my focus is really about the monthly positive income, you know, going to a traditional lender, 30-year fixed was the route that I chose. And that has worked well for me.
That's great. Now, was it hard getting pre-approved? Like, tell me what the process was like as far as what kind of documentation the lenders wanted. Was there a lot of back and forth?
So I had purchased when you're dealing with the traditional banks, it's no different than when you're purchasing your home. The only difference was, is I was buying a rental that had renters. And so they wanted leases.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to get leases drawn up, had the leases. Other than that, it was the typical asset verification, income verification, and credit that you would have to give if you were purchasing a home to live in, an owner-occupant.
Right. Now, you said that you had to get the leases drawn up. Did the person you were buying the property from not have leases with the tenants?
They did not have, did not have leases.
Wow. Okay. Do you know why? Like, that's
so what we put in the offer was that I wanted estoppels, which was because I assumed there were leases. So I put in the offer to get an estoppel which is a document, you know, a document that says, yes, buyer, but it's signed by the tenant. Yes, buyer, everything in these leases is accurate. I signed that lease that is for $1,000 a month.
Okay.
So we put in there to get estoppels. And then when we put that in the offer, it's like, well, you can't get estoppels because there's no leases. And she was just a, she lived an hour away. She used to live in the property, and she was just a, you know, casual landlord and didn't think she needed them.
Oh, okay. Did she have security deposits?
No.
Okay. So now how does that work for you? So did you make them pay a security deposit when you bought the property, or are
no.
you just
so
at risk
no
there?
Security deposits couldn't get them. They didn't have to because their leases ran for about an extra 6 months. And so there was nothing I could do to force them unless I forced the seller. And I was, you know, a overly ambitious buyer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the seller was telling us, listen, I can't get these from the tenants and they're not willing to put it up. You either kick the tenants out upon, you know, purchase because they don't have leases, mm-hmm. and you deal with that process, or you're not getting security deposits.
Okay.
And so I rolled the dice and said, you know what? I got leases and move forward.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, I think you had a good deal here and you made that work, and, you know, having a $1,000 security deposit isn't going to make or break a deal anyway. So,
no, but what I will tell you, what I learned was, you know, when those leases rolled in 6 months, the tenants did leave to find new places. And so now I have to re-rent them. The, call it quote unquote, you know, $1,200 number that you hear to paint and carpet, that wasn't my number. There was this, you know, I had about a $5,000 investment to get these really rent ready because these tenants were there for years prior.
Okay.
And so, yeah. You know, security deposits would have been helpful, lesson learned.
Yeah.
But to get those, call it rent ready, there was some, you know, when you're buying with renters, you come across some unforeseen deferred maintenance,
yeah.
and other things that I, you know, I couldn't see through a property inspection or, you know, something behind the couch. And to fix it up was, you know, more than I thought.
Yeah.
And then I did a couple things above and beyond. Like they were all hardwood floors. I refinished them, restained them to try to raise rents.
Yeah. You know, that's always kind of the trade-off is, yeah, I've bought several properties with tenants in it, and I love it, like you said earlier, that it's nice getting that rent check as soon as you close, and you have a month before your first mortgage payment is due. But the downside is that you're probably going to have more turnover costs than normal because you don't 100% know what the property is like when there's a tenant in there. So there's always going to be some kind of deferred maintenance. So, Chris, well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it. If someone wants to reach out to you, what's the best way for someone to contact you?
So the two best ways, I'm super active on LinkedIn. So you can find me, Chris Ressa, on LinkedIn, or christopher.a.ressa@gmail.com.
If you missed that and you want to look up Chris's contact information, I've got it on the website. You can look it up at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode166. I've got another episode for you on Thursday. Thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.